Welcome to another edition of Hack Shack Talks. Your boy Paul here with my co-host.
Hey, it's Nick Conyers checking in for another episode.
Today's guest comes from us by way of Corpus Christi, old hometown of all of ours here. People been asking to hear from this guy, man. He's the 10-year-old swing guru. Ryan Benavides. Ryan, what's up, man? Welcome to the show.
How you doing? The one and only. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man. So for those that don't know, Ryan's a up-and-coming instructor, man, here at the Hack Shack. Been lucky to have him here. Doing a lot of really good things with some young kids, man. Got a lot of talent coming through your way. But let's kind of talk about you, man. So let's take it back to the old Corpus Christi City by the Sea and Corpus Christi Carroll. Played for, I believe, Lee Yeager back in the day, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So played at Carroll back in my first season was 2011. So I was actually very fortunate. I was a part of the kind of Carroll dynasty. They won state in 2010. My freshman year was 2011, the year after. And they won that state championship with seven starting sophomores. So going in freshman year, I mean, I was right behind a defending state championship team, as well as seven returning starters. So all through high school, I mean, I got to learn from those guys, from Coach Yeager, from a proven system, obviously. We went to the state semis my freshman year and lost. Went to the state semis again my sophomore year and lost. And then my senior year, we were number one in the state and then ended up losing, I believe, in the fourth or fifth round. Can't remember. There. So I was very fortunate to be a part of a good program. I learned from a lot of great guys, a lot of good coaches, stuff like that. So, yeah.
I got to correct you on the dynasty. There's only one dynasty in Corpus, Doug. That's the Moody Trojans.
Oh, okay. I think that's biased.
There's only one dynasty down there, Doug.
I would call three state trips in a row, 3 years in a row. That's pretty good. So, but yeah, we'll agree to disagree.
You played with Courtney Hawkins, right?
I did. So yeah, Courtney was a junior when I was a freshman. So got to be a part of that. And really, honestly, I mean, my senior year, we got really close through the fall up and leading to the draft. Just really started to understand work ethic with him. I mean, we hit every day, Monday through Friday, you know, after school from 4 until, you know, maybe the sun was down. But while everybody else was going home, some guys would hang around here and there. I mean, I hit with him, learned a lot about hitting from him, but even more so just the work ethic side of it.
So, man, is this true? Like, I've heard stories that dude, like, missed parties, missed prom, missed girlfriends, the whole nine yards, because he was just that focused and that determined to get where he got and get drafted. Were those just kind of rumors, or is that kind of some truth to that?
No, it was true. He, I mean, that dude sacrificed everything for it. I mean, I think the biggest example I can use is New Year's Eve, whenever even, you know, in high school, you're not really out, you know, partying or
anything,
but
you're
still with family and stuff like that, though, too. But even any kind of, you know, team gatherings we had, New Year's Eve or anything like that, he was in the cages because he was just so engulfed in, you know, being or wanting to be a first round draft pick and getting drafted high and everything like that. And so he was hitting. When midnight hit, he was hitting. He was in the cages. He invited a lot of us to go. A lot of us didn't want to go, but that was but that was him. That's who he was. You know, and so he made those sacrifices. Like I said, he worked his butt off completely. I got to see it, whether it was in the weight room, whether it was when we were running, whether it's hitting on the field. I mean, he went 110% and gave it 100% all he had, and rightfully so got drafted where he got drafted there in 2012.
Yeah. So now we know, like, Yeager's, like, left Carroll some years back and kind of built a, I'm not going to say dynasty, but a good program at Veterans. So do you still kind of talk to him a little bit? You keep in touch with him?
I talk to him. I'd say probably about once a month. We connect a lot. We talk baseball. A family friend of mine pitched there. He took vets to state in, I believe, 2018. So was real still connected in the program that way, really. And then through college, I would go back and hit there a lot, and everything like that. But yeah, we still talk baseball a lot. We talk everything. I mean, life, everything like that. I mean, here, just moving forward, we've just grown a lot closer than actually we were in high school. In high school, there was kind of just that separation of coach and player. And now that I'm in college and kind of now going into, you know, being adult and everything like that, we've gotten a lot closer in our communication's gotten a lot more.
That's good. He's a good dude, man. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people don't like him, but it's people tend to hate on winners.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. If he's got haters, he's doing something right.
He's doing something right. If you got haters, you're doing something right, especially when you're winning a lot in baseball.
Of course,
people
of course.
Hate you, but. So take us through, man, kind of like I know, Carol, you had a short stint at St. Mary's here in San Antonio, then found your way at Alvin, and then on to D1 at Little Rock, Arkansas. So how'd you find your way at St. Mary's, and then kind of take us through your college career, man?
So, yeah, so St. Mary's, so I mean, to be honest, I was an average player in high school. I mean, I hit 8-hole my senior year on a really good, you know, Carroll team. I mean, we were going through my senior year, we were bouncing around from one to number one in the state, number two in the state, everything like that. But I even back to my junior year, I split time my junior year and didn't start fully starting till I'd say like midway through district. So, I mean, I split time a lot. But coming out of high school, I was an average player, wasn't recruited. Didn't talk to any schools at all. The only kind of connection that I had was my mom and went to St. Mary's. She was like the manager there, whatever it was, for the baseball team while she was there in college. She had known Coach Meagle, who is still the coach there now. Made that connection. So yeah, that's how I ended up at St. Mary's, really, as a walk-on. Went up over there and then was there for a semester. Absolutely loved it. Made a lot of good friends there. Loved the program. Nothing against the program or anything like that. But just in my heart, I knew I'd felt like I had settled from a point of where I felt like that was a comfortable decision for me to make. My family was academics first, baseball second. The JUCO route was never, ever up for discussion coming through high school. And then finally, after, you know, that one semester there at St. Mary's and also getting that that bill for the semester and knowing how much I had to pay, up front to be able to pre-register for my classes or get athlete priority registration. I knew I wanted to make a change. I knew I had more baseball grind in me. So reached out to my high school coach, Steve Hutcherson, who won a state championship out at Grapevine and is now the head coach at Liberty Hill. Had the connection at Alvin for me, completely put his name on me. Alvin had never seen me. Never anything. The coaches called me. They offered me a scholarship. I'd never been on a visit, never seen anything about it. Committed on the spot, made that decision to leave it this semester. And went to Alvin. And then, yeah. So, I mean, it was honestly one of the best decisions I've ever made for sure.
Yeah, and then so you spend – did you go in and start playing right away or did you redshirt there?
So, yeah. So my freshman year at Alvin, probably second day of practice, blew out my ankle, was done for the season. So I missed my freshman season, and then going into my sophomore year or my redshirt freshman year, had even more injuries too. That fall ended up rupturing my spleen, breaking my ribs and puncturing my lung that fall, like end of November-ish, or I'm sorry, beginning of November. So toward the end of the fall season. So I thought, here we go again, but was able to push through it, had a pretty good freshman year there at Alvin, ended up all conference. Finished hitting whatever I hit. I'm not sure, couldn't remember. But I went from a high school kid where I hit 8-hole in, you know, on a pretty good, you know, varsity team to hitting 3-4-hole at the junior college level and consistently staying there and being a completely different hitter. So to be honest, going into that first season, I didn't know what to expect from myself. But I think that season for me did it everything from a confidence standpoint and proving to myself, you know, that, you know, I'm here. I can do this. I can compete with these guys and everything like that. And so for me, that first season was huge, huge for my whole college career.
I forget that St. Mary's bill. How about that medical bill?
Yeah, right.
Blowing probably, out ankles, blowing out spleens.
Probably about
ribs.
The same price, to be honest. St. Mary's was no joke.
So how do you find your way from Alvin to Little Rock?
So, so going through the recruiting process, stuff like that. Man, it was stressful. I couldn't imagine for, you know, the kids that are blessed enough to go through it at 16, 17 years old. I mean, I was going through it at 20, 21 years old, and it was definitely one of the most stressful times of my life. Was fortunate enough to get selected to the JUCO All-Star Game, the Texas New Mexico JUCO All-Star Game. When I say every school in the country is
everybody
there, every single school in the country is there.
They play that where they play, where the Skeeters play?
It moves every year. So, yeah. So that year it was at Blinn. Fortunate enough it was at Blinn because Blinn is a porch. The ball flies out there. But, yeah, I mean, it was stressful going into that JUCO All-Star Game. I'd got some calls previously. Going to the JUCO All-Star Game, have the BP of my life, and my phone is even, and you can't help but check your phone during this. Mm-hmm. I know you're not supposed to check it before games, but my phone is blowing up. It's just text message after text message after text message. Hey, Ryan, this is Coach So-and-so, Coach So-and-so, Coach So-and-so. Give me a call after the game. Give me a call after the game. Go through, have a good in and out. I ended up leading off, playing center field. We're the home team, first pitch of the game to lead it off for the home team. I hit an opposite field home run. And right then and there, even looking back on it now, I knew in that moment that a lot of stuff was going to change for me, and it did. I mean, the very first call I got walking out of that dugout was for Mizzou, and actually, small world now, Coach Hallmark, who's now the head coach at UTSA, mm-hmm. was the recruiting coordinator there at Mizzou. And so immediately when I'm walking out the dugout there, I'm smiling. I'm looking at my family. I want to say hi to my family, everything like that. And my phone immediately rang before I even got a chance to say hi to my mom. And Coach Hallmark calls me and he's like, is this Ryan? I said, yes, sir. He's like, Coach Hallmark, are you doing Mizzou Tigers? And from a kid that went from absolutely, you know, not getting recruited at all, to you know, getting a call from an SEC school, you know, immediately following that game, I mean, it meant everything. You know, I mean, to say I didn't, you know, break down after that, you know, whenever it was all said and done, I mean, it's, I'd be lying if I said I didn't, because, you know, it's like all that hard work, all the, you know, ups and downs you go through, I mean, it paid off. And even though it didn't work out with Mizzou, like I said, just getting that call gave me all the confidence in the world. But moving into Little Rock, to be 100% honest, I had no idea who Little Rock was prior to them calling me. I talked to a lot of schools. Some coaches go about it different ways, you know, like, hey, I'm going to come see you. And, you know, things get in the way, everything like that. Coach Silver at Little Rock calls me on a Thursday, gives me his whole spiel. I mean, I fell in love, you know, from the very first conversation that we had. He was as real as it got. He was a straight shooter. Okay. But he gets into it with me. Kind of just breaking down everything that the program, the direction they want to head, everything like that. Tells me that he's going to call three of my other teammates. We go up there on a visit on that next Monday. We drive up there, get offered that Tuesday, committed on the spot. Fell in love with the coaching staff, fell in love with, you know, the fact that I had three of my JUCO teammates going with mm-hmm. me too as well. But just fell in love with the staff, the program, you know, the direction that they were heading. I knew they were recruiting some guys from other schools in our conference too, like San Jack and stuff. And so knew that it was the right fit for me. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, and I even asked previous to getting recruited, you know, like, how do I know what school I want to go to? Like, how am I going to know? And how, or like, how do you know? And I asked the guys, like, you know, that were already committed, that were at schools, like, how do you know? And they just said, like, when you know, you know. Like, you know. And so
you don't know until you know.
Exactly. So, but yeah, after it was all said and done, I mean, I knew from that first night, and they were fortunate. They offered me a pretty big scholarship. And I would have committed for even half of that too. And so I told them that after the fact too. I don't know how much they like that. But I was like, man, coach, I said I would have committed for half of that. But no, it's just really though. I mean, the coaching staff there, Coach Curry, love him to death. Still talk to him a lot. Was a big influence in my life. Outside of baseball, Coach Silva, who's now the pitching coach at Louisiana Tech, big part of my life. Coach, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He's at RGV now, the hitting coach. Coach Rayleigh was there on my visit too. Fell in love with him too and his hitting philosophy. Unfortunately, he left and went to UTRGV. But yeah, I mean, the coaches that I had there, Coach Sanders, who's still there now, Coach Spees, who ended up coming in too. I mean, that whole program for me and the guys I met there, I'm definitely happy with the decision I made. It was definitely an adjustment moving out of state, but wouldn't have traded it for the world for sure.
Yeah, and that's tough to do, man, because a lot of people get wrapped up in the names, you know, and especially, you know, that you go through the All-Star game and the first call you get is Mizzou.
Yeah.
You're like, there's nowhere to go up. But I mean, like, you're thinking big name D1 from there. So for you to, like, have the mindset of, and this is something that I know you and I have talked about and I love the way you phrase this. It's go where you're wanted, not where you want to go.
Yeah.
And I feel like that gets lost in the translation of this whole process. Cause like you said, it's a tough process when you have schools calling, you don't know what to do. And unfortunately, a lot of times, especially out of high school, you know, kids will just go to that first name and just get lost in the mix and end up going to that JUCO and stuff like that. So that was definitely a tough decision, but
And I owe that to a good buddy of mine, Kenny Sines. He signed to OU out of mm-hmm. high school, Oklahoma, yeah. out of high school. Ended up being there, I think, his freshman and sophomore year and transferring to BYU. And he's the one that gave me that guidance. I mean, he went there and he told me, he went to Oklahoma, you know, just on the name. I'm not sure from scholarship wise what he received, but I know it was a good scholarship there. But, you know, he jumped on that and wanted to make that move. And, you know, who wouldn't want to out of high school? Mm-hmm. But, you know, he said looking back on it too, you know, his experience at BYU was a lot better than it was at Oklahoma. And he said, the biggest thing that I can leave you with is, you know, go where they want you and not where you want to go. And I took that to heart, really. And even more so too, just seeing, you know, with guys from my freshman year in JUCO who, you know, had that ego when it came to recruiting, and not that there's anything wrong with that too, but, you know, they're at these big name schools and, you know, they're sitting for 2 years or there for mm-hmm. a year and transferring out and everything like that. And I knew I just didn't want that for myself. And at the same time, you know, it's not that I was afraid of competition at a bigger school. But at the same time too, you know, you gotta, it's a business, you know, the scholarship money talks, and you know, you want to go somewhere too. It's baseball too. Baseball's it's a funny sport. You know, you can go through ruts and get caught in that rut. And, you know, I was fortunate enough at Little Rock to where my junior year, I started off, you know, pretty shaky, pretty rough. I wasn't having the season I wanted, but they stuck by my side. I mean, the scholarship money they had given me, where they were invested in me.
Yeah.
So I got every opportunity to play. You know, if I go somewhere else, and you know, I start off doing like that, I probably don't get a chance to step on the field again. So it's just kind of the nature of the beast and everything like that. But at the same time too, I mean, you could have all the experiences in the world playing at a big time school, and if you are fortunate enough to start, but I mean, it's really hard to start as a freshman or even as a junior, you know, at Texas Tech, at Texas, at, you know, at A&M, stuff mm-hmm. like that. I mean, those are big name schools, and so
many kids,
yeah,
so much talent,
yeah. And I mean, at the same time too, I mean, our goal is to all get drafted. You can't get drafted unless you play and put up numbers. So I knew I wanted to get into a good conference. I knew great things about the Sun Belt. I was more familiar with UTA, Texas State, Louisiana Lafayette, and then Coastal Carolina, who are obviously previous national champions. I knew they had moved into the conference, so I knew it was a hell of a baseball conference, and so I wanted to get into it. Got that offer and didn't ever look back.
So you know, you talk about like going where you want, right? So many kids, and you're seeing this, and man, I hope somebody, NCAA, somebody gets control of this, but you're seeing eighth graders, ninth graders. It's become like almost a fad to commit to the big schools and put it on Twitter, and I'd like to thank God and my parents, et cetera, right? But, you know, right now you're seeing, because of COVID, so many kids. You talk about, you know, there's 60 guys on a roster. Well, I mean, you can only have 35 by rules, right? And 28 travel. So how many guys are being left back? You know what I mean? Yeah. So, you know, it takes some like maturity, right, to make the decisions you made, to not do the Mizzou or the big schools and go where you're wanted. You know what I mean? We talk to our kids and summer guys a lot about like, exactly, go where you wanted. Don't go just because of it's a name, right? I mean, yeah, Texas, OU, those are all great, right? But what do you think, like, is the biggest misconception going from high school to college that you would love to tell parents, if there was a bunch of parents and kids right here in this room? What's one of the biggest things and pieces of advice that you would give them, and, like, one of the you think might be their biggest misconception about when you hit campus from high school to college?
So, I mean, to start off, one thing, and I know it's tough for parents, and I know, you know, I don't have any kids myself, but I know everybody likes to think their baby's an all-star and everything like that. But I think at some point you got to be realistic, one. I mean, you have to be a realistic one in schools that you want to go, in schools that you want your son to play at. I'm sure it's not just a parent thing, too. You're going to have coaches along the way that are going to help guide, too. But I think the biggest thing is just, you know, being close. To start off, like I said, you don't want to be close with a coach who kind of just talks up your son and really doesn't hit on the things that he needs to work on, or, you know, hit on things like, hey, let's be realistic here as to schools that he can go to. A lot of parents, even as a kid, you know, you'll take that as a knock to you and you personally, but at the same time too, I mean, I had those tough conversations, and I remember talking to my summer coaches through high school, and I wanted him to make these calls for me. He's like, hey man, look, like, I can't make these calls. Like, you don't hit good enough. Like, I can't. He's like, I can call this D3 JUCO or this, you know, NAIA here, whatever. And it was just like, you know, for me, I just knew, I was like, man, it's just, it was a reality check. It was a reality check. But on the other side of it though, too, the college game, I mean, I wish I had numbers for you, but I mean, it is a business. I mean, there are so many guys who show up to big time Division Ones their freshman year, either last a semester or last that whole year and transfer out and go JUCO or go to another school. I mean, half the guys that I played with were JUCO guys. Even more so too, we had a bunch of guys who went to a big time D1, went to a JUCO, transferred. Some started off playing football, went to baseball. I mean, whatever it is. So I think the biggest thing that I didn't understand was the it's not as perfect as it looks from the outside looking in. There's a lot of moving around. Yeah. As much as everybody wants to stay at a school for 4 years, it usually doesn't work like that. Division I level, there's 11.7 scholarships. Mm-hmm. They bring you in as a freshman, let's say on 50%, you know, and they don't think, you know, you show up on campus and they don't think you're going to be able to be a contributor to maybe your sophomore year, not your junior year. And I say, hey, you're probably going to need to go find another place to play, or let's go the JUCO route or something like that, because they don't have money to be wasting on kids to be rejected out for 2 to 3 years. It's if they're giving you money as a freshman in substantial amount, it's, hey, they're expecting you to start. And so even more so too for parents that, you know, that look at their kids who aren't getting those Division I offers, it's point blank. I mean, it's tough to walk on a Division I or Division II campus and, you know, start any campus, you know, and start as a freshman. So really too, like I said, if as a parent too, if your kid's not getting those calls, you know, there's, you know, places to grow there, and there's nothing wrong with that too, because I wasn't recruited at all. I can say this from a wholehearted place that, you know, just point blank, sometimes you're just not good enough and need to get better. And that's how I was. And that was the position I was coming out of high school. And, you know, you don't ever want to believe that, but
No one ever wants to hear that their mijo or mija isn't good enough.
Exactly, sure. Exactly. But at the same time, too, I mean, it's part of it. And it was the safe decision for me to go to St. Mary's. Yeah. Definitely don't regret it at all. My family had the best interest in me as far as academics and stuff. You know, academics first, baseball second. But I made the choice, and I'll never forget my grandpa told me. He's like, you know, he said, whatever decision you make, he's like, I want you to live with that. He's like, but I'm going to let you make this adult decision. And at first, I'll be honest, when I got hurt, I was like, man, what did I get myself into? being in Alvin, Texas, coming from San Antonio, Texas. To Alvin, Texas. But, I mean, fell in love with it, fell in love with the grind, fell in love with baseball. Yeah. I mean, it was for me, it's what I wanted. So it's, you know, if I don't make this work, it's on me.
Yep.
And so that's what I want parents to understand too. You know, it's, you need to really look back and, you know, reevaluate your kids and see, you know, do they want to play college baseball, or do you want them to play college baseball?
Yeah, 100%.
That's a lot of it. I mean, my parents and family, they could have cared less if I played college baseball. Don't get me wrong, they enjoyed every second of it. But they just wanted me to get my degree.
Yeah.
I was the one that wanted to play college baseball. I'm the one that pushed it. I pushed the envelope. I mean, I'm the one who worked, you know, my butt off, you know, through college and everything like that to get it there. And they were going to support me 100% of the way. But definitely, I think that side of it too is a big element. But like I said, I don't have any kids. It's tough to say though too from that side of it, but. But yeah,
that's, you know, you keep bringing up the word work, right? So for me, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions of kids in high school and parents is I don't think they realize just how hard it is to get there. It's even harder to stay there.
Yeah.
And the work that's expected of you, not just on the field, but in the classroom, et cetera, maintaining all that in one schedule. Because you don't have your mom and dad telling you like, hey, mm-hmm. Ryan, like, you got to turn in this paper tomorrow. Like, you might want to get it done. You know what I mean? So it's a different experience, you know. So kind of talk about that. Like, what was a typical day for you as a student athlete?
So, I mean,
Alvin and then Arkansas.
Yeah. So, I mean, point blank, it's a full time job. I mean, early on, I remember after I got hurt, you know, my freshman year in JUCO, I told myself, I was like, you know, if I want to play professional baseball, which I, you know, obviously didn't get the opportunity to do, but either way, I said, I'm going to treat this, you know, like it's my profession, you know. So everything I did, the way I ate, the way I slept, the way I, you know, drank fluids, everything I did revolved around, you know, baseball and, you know, me setting myself up for success. At Alvin, we didn't have that much, you know, structure outside of baseball practice. We didn't have mandatory weights. We didn't have mandatory study hall.
You gotta lock that door over there.
I'll lock it.
I pulled down the big one, turned off the lights.
Perfect. Thank you.
thought somebody else was going to do it.
I'll take care of it.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye. But didn't have much structure to it. So all we had to do was be at practice there at 1:30, or I believe it was 1 o'clock, whatever it was. Practice is done about 4:30, and then that's it. You're on your own. You got to take care of your school, your lifting, everything on your own. And to be honest, the majority of the guys there, they didn't take care of their school. They didn't take care of their lifting, everything like that. I made it to point to make sure to get my lifts in, you know, 4 or 5 days a week without any guidance, you know, trying to make friends in the gym and taking it upon myself, you know, to make sure my body was in the right shape, as well as my studies too, you know, making sure I was on top of that, taking care of everything I needed to take care of. And even at that too, practice started at 1:00. We really weren't required to be there till about 12:30. I made sure to get there, depending on my class schedule, at least an hour and a half before. Take care of whatever I needed to take care of, hitting the cages by myself and nobody's there, hit off the tee, get my tee work in, et cetera, as well as my lifting and eating right and everything like that. Division I or NCAA, completely different. Definitely an eye-opener for sure. Typical fall Monday, you got weights at 6 a.m. Or, well, let's say Monday, 4 days a week, you have weights at 6 a.m. You get done with weights about 7:30. You go to breakfast. From breakfast, you get done. You go to class. Class usually, by that time, usually have about a 9 a.m. You're going from class from about 9 to about 12 o'clock. You're getting your lunch. You go from lunch to, you know, 12 to about 12:45, whatever it is. You got practice that starts at 2. You do your best to get there by 1, get your early work in. What people don't understand, too, is when you get to the college level, there's a practice before practice.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but you have a practice before practice. You have a mandatory, voluntary early work that you got to be there for. So you're getting a whole practice in before you practice.
Yeah.
Then you roll in to your official practice. Practice you get done about 4 or 5 o'clock. From there, it's shower, go to dinner, you got study hall runs till about 8 o'clock, and by that time the only thing you want to do is go to bed. Yeah, go to bed. So yeah, 100%. So that's and that's a typical fall. But even at that though too,
yeah,
Saturday you got some kind of volunteering if you don't have practice. Yeah. There's not too much free time. Sunday's really about the only day you get off. And in the spring it's a different animal in itself. You play every Tuesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Thursday's your travel day. Monday is usually your mandatory day off.
Yeah.
But the spring is a different animal in itself. But it's no joke. It's a full-time job. I took it upon myself, and a lot of my teammates did. The guys that, you know, I kept myself around to treat it like a profession. Like I said, the way I slept, the way I ate, the way I drank fluids, anything and everything that I did revolved around helping me succeed on the field. And I think really if kids go into that mentality, as opposed to, you know, I'm just here, it's not going to work out for you like that. And you got to separate yourself at every level, especially if you want to be a starter. And then from there, all conference, et cetera, you know, you got to separate yourself in any way possible that you can. And that's the way I saw it.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about the work and the grind. Let's talk a little bit about the fun stuff. So I know, you know, in us talking, you all got to play a lot of big time schools at Little Rock. Who was your favorite to play? I mean, whether it was a Tuesday game against, you know, one of the bigger D1s or a rival in the conference. Who was kind of who was your favorite weekend to play? Who was your favorite team to play?
Well, in conference, I'll say it was tough. It was tough. We had a fun conference. Louisiana Lafayette, Louisiana baseball is absolutely different. The atmosphere is crazy. Yeah. Anybody that doesn't know about Lafayette, they went through a little run. They had a dynasty run where they hosted a regional or two. They made a super regional. They were number one team in the country at one point. Those Cajuns, they love their baseball over there. So definitely a great place to play down there. A lot of great memories. Texas State was also a great weekend with our team too, having a lot of Texas boys. We always wanted to beat up on Texas State, so that was always a lot of fun playing at their place and playing at our place. Coastal Carolina too. I mean, Coastal Carolina, with them having the national championship, I think they're in 2016. Obviously, you know, being an up and coming program now, but you know, usually a top 25 team in the nation every year. That was always fun too. I mean, going out to their place, being at that stadium, seeing the facility, kind of just seeing what it looks like, seeing, you know, that it's realistic even at our conference level, you know, seeing what a national championship type talent was, even though we're a few years removed, you know, they still had some guys there and they were still up and coming. But
yeah.
And then from a big time school, Mississippi State, I'll say that. Yeah. Mississippi State on a Tuesday, we showed up. I think there was like 6,000-8,000 people there on a Tuesday.
That's crazy.
They got condos in left field. They had just redid, I think it's Doobie Noble.
Yeah.
But they had just redid the field. Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. The saying, you know, from, I can't even think, I just went blank on the movie. You're going to kill me for this, but if you build it, they will come.
Feel the dreams. Feel the dreams. Feel
the
dreams.
Sorry. Yeah. It's a little before my time, but feel the dreams. But but if you build it, they will come. That is the true, absolute truth. I mean, they have people they have barbecue pits all set up, tiered out in the outfield. People are barbecuing. People show up. They absolutely love their Mississippi State baseball. Atmosphere was absolutely insane. The field was absolutely insane. I believe they either went to Omaha that year, or this was my senior year, or had gone to Omaha the year before, and then had a fellow JUCO, he wasn't a teammate, well, he played at Blinn, who was playing outfield there for them, so had that connection. It was good seeing him. We had made our connections playing through JUCO together. But yeah, it's just, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Even though I think we got whooped pretty bad that game. We went up like 5 or 6-0 and then had a few errors, whatever it was. But just
y'all were charged. We're going to do it.
But the atmosphere was absolutely insane. To even flip the script on it too, we did go up to Arkansas on a Tuesday and beat them 17-7 in front of about 8,000 people. So that was them fresh off being a national runner-up too. So a lot of good baseball, a lot of great memories. Enjoyed it every second of it. Soaked it all in, and it was fun. It was fun. Yeah. You got me reminiscing.
I kind of want to ask and to just give some advice to the younger guys or maybe people in college. And so, how in those big moments where you got 6,000 to 8,000 fans just screaming at you, how do you stay calm in a situation like that? Especially, you know, going back to what you said earlier, kid, you tried to grind his whole life. You know, wasn't handed anything. How do you, stay calm and you know, have success in a situation like that?
You don't.
In a situation you've never been in with all those fans. I mean, that's got to be tough at a big-time school. Like,
I think, two things. So, one, it's obviously believing in yourself. Yeah. I played in a summer ball coach that I had, Mike Jackson and Eric Anthony, who have long tenured MLB careers. Coach Anthony told me one time, I think I was like 16 years old, we'll never forget it. He said, if you can't look yourself in the mirror every day and tell yourself the best, he's like, do not step on that field.
Yep.
Took that to heart all the way through. Great Coach Ager, too, as well. He said this all through high school. He said, if you're prepared, you have no reason to be nervous.
Yep.
I take that into everything I do in life, whether it's baseball, whether it's, like I said, work, whether it's whatever, a test, whatever it is. If you're prepared, you should have no reason to be nervous. He said, point blank to kind of answer your question, I trusted in all the work and all the preparation, whether it was eating right, hitting, lifting, fielding, practicing, to know that when I came game time that I was prepared for that moment.
Yeah.
And that's really honestly all I relayed on, and that confidence level too. At the same time, it's a quiet confidence, but you know, you walk on that field and I will 100% say I believed I was the best person on that field. It doesn't matter 100%. Who we played. It's not that I was cocky, but I really wholeheartedly believe that nobody else on that field prepared as much as I did and worked as hard as I did.
Yep.
And when you take that confidence onto the field, win or lose, strike out 4 times, hit four home runs, at the college level, it's a man's game. If you don't walk onto the field with that confidence and trust in your preparation, you're done before the game even starts.
Yep.
So to continue on the fun thing, right, you never really hear anybody talk about college summer ball. And I know, like, you got to go to Canada. Ryan, I know you played in the Texas Collegiate League.
2017 TCL champ.
Oh, here we go.
Brazos Valley Bombers.
He's showing off the ring right now. He brought it to the podcast.
Brazos Valley Bombers, baby.
They had Dynasty, too, because you throw that word out a lot. Dynasty.
Hey, I know you're a little upset. No knock to my movie Trojans here, but
So, kind of talk about you and both of y'all really kind of talk about how much fun it is to go play summer ball and get invited to some of these big, like, collegiate summer leagues and just kind of being out there with your peers, man, having fun, playing the game. There's no more pressure anymore, but it's a different animal, right? But it's got to be a lot of fun to be asked to go and play in leagues like that, right?
I will say, I mean, summer ball for me was the absolute, the best way to put it, it's the dessert to the whole thing. You know, it's really just the most absolute fun you will ever have playing baseball. I enjoyed every single moment of it. Played in College Station up at the Bombers. Played with guys from San Diego State, Michigan State, Texas, Texas A&M. You name it, you know, top to bottom, some really, really high-level talents. But even more so, too, I mean, to be in that situation, it's the absolute most fun I've ever had playing baseball in my entire life. The fans are great. You have no obligation but to play baseball. And that is it, and work out and just enjoy a summer with your friends. And you get great crowds there. They're usually, you know, having a good time out there, yep, to say the least, for lack of a better terms too.
Be but nice. I mean,
yeah, but they become invested in you. You're treated like celebrities there in College Station. I mean, for me at least, I mean, I'd go out to eat, you know, people asking, you know, can I take pictures? You know, can you sign this? Can you sign that? Great game last night, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, and usually summer ball takes place in small towns. That's all they have.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to put into words. If you know, then you know. Yeah. And I wish I had a better way to put it into words, but it is just 100% just
it's literally
best time of my life.
Literally,
best time of my life. Yeah. I will talk about that summer of 2017 for the rest of my life for sure. And I'll show off that ring too. So I won't let y'all forget about it.
Don't worry, baby. You got a ring too, though.
I did get a ring. Yeah. Yeah. It was, I think it was that same year, the summer of 2017. Yeah. Up in Canada, we ended up winning the whole thing up there. So that was a blast getting to go to different provinces and cities and totally a culture shock. But like Ryan said, man, it's just so stress-free and fun. Like, yeah, you're out there, you're still getting your reps, still getting your work in, but I mean, now that I'm talking about it, it is hard to put into words. It's just totally different, man. It's just a lot of fun. Something you have to experience. You know, don't stay in your hometown. Don't play, you know, play close to home.
Go off.
Go if you can. And it's usually the way it works is you'll usually talk to your college coaches, and they usually have connections somewhere. So if you can, man, go wherever you can. Get away, and I promise you'll have the best time of your life.
And even, too, I played summer ball in one summer, too, and it's a lot tougher to get in the work you need necessary because you can't just sit around all summer. You can't. As a college athlete, you cannot sit around all summer. I was the guy, I'll say my freshman year, I was like, hey, coach, I mean, I'm burnt out from, you know, 60-game season. They're like, do you want to go play summer ball? I was like, no, I want to get healthy. I want to work out, stuff like that. I promise you right now, you can tell yourself that all you want. There are all the distractions in the world that are home. Everybody's home from college. Everybody's not on the same mission as you. Everybody does not have the same agenda as you. It is real easy to get caught in a lot of extracurricular things and other things outside of baseball and outside of what you're trying to do, which is propel yourself into that fall and into that next year. When you're playing summer ball, you all have the same agenda. You all have the same mindset. You all have the same everything, and you're away from all the distractions of people who do not have that. And it's able to, like I said, just keep you molded and keep you moving in the right direction to where you need to be going into that fall.
Yeah, and I guess the best way to describe it, maybe now that I've been thinking about it, is it's like going back to Little League, man. I mean, so when you're in college and you're playing college ball, like Ryan said, I mean, they've made an investment into you. They have a scholarship in you. You need to – exactly. It's a job. You have to produce. Summer ball, you're not – I mean, typically you're not getting paid. I don't know, you know, about other leagues, but you're not getting paid. It is totally just stress-free, fun. Like I said, the best way to describe it is like you're in Little League, just having fun, playing the game, no school, no other responsibilities. Just, man, it's a great time.
For sure.
So you got to be careful, though, because sometimes that celebration ends up on the newspaper, right, with you. Oh. You got to be careful sometimes. Right? Sometimes the celebration ends up with you chugging out of the championship trophy on the newspaper. Yeah, you got to be careful sometimes.
Yeah. It's apple juice.
Apple juice.
For all the 21 and under
current. Yeah, it's apple juice.
Yeah, we were fortunate enough to win, man, and that was one of the best experiences, too, because literally as soon as we won, there was about four or five ice chests of beer – and they were just throwing it to us, and we were taking chugs out of the
disclaimer, the drinking age in Canada is 18.
So yes, well, so I was either 20, 21, 22.
Either way.
Yeah. But yeah, man, yeah. And they caught me and put me on the newspaper. Yeah.
And it found its way all the way here to Texas.
Exactly.
So, man, like, so you know, I've always, growing up, my parents always said, my dad always said, like, you know, it's not, sometimes, a lot of times, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So, man, you're like, for me, the quintessential guide to that. Like, you always go on about the connections you made through your college career with this coach, that coach, this coach, at this college, and so forth. So, man, where does that come from? Does that just kind of come from your upbringing? Or, I mean, was that just like, you had a vision of someday I'm going to be a college coach, so I got to make sure I keep these connections all put together? You know, I've always said, like, hey, you always want to keep those connections because you never know what you're going to need down the road, or you don't want to burn bridges, et cetera, et cetera. So where did that kind of come? Where was that instilled from you? Like, your mom, your dad, your mom or your grandfather? Like, where was that kind of, where did that kind of come from?
To be honest, there was no agenda, I don't think, behind those relationships and the relationships I kind of built. I'll say, and I live and die by this, the relationships I made in baseball, whether it was teammates, whether it was coaches, I will have for the rest of my life, and I appreciate those relationships more than anything in the world. I really met a lot of great people. Not that I didn't have a lot of great people, I weren't surrounded by a lot of great people in high school, but throughout college, like I said, coaches and players, so many people that I respected and I got the same respect in return, so many people that I think are just amazing people, people that I want to be like, whether it was, like I said, whether it was peers or whether it was coaches, there's a lot of people I looked up to. And just like I said, just staying in touch with good people, like I said, just great relationships are hard to come by like that. Yep. And just full circle, I mean, you just really never know. I mean, I had great relationships with all my coaches, still continue to stay in touch with them, and it just so happens, I mean, my summer coach with the Bombers of 2017 is now the head coach at Wharton Junior College. My grad assistant when I was at Little Rock, who we just got along with, ended up is now the recruiting coach at Galveston College. Still talk all the time with my Alvin coaches. One of the Alvin coaches who left is now a scout for the Cincinnati Reds. Coach that recruited me is now at Louisiana Tech. I mean, it really never came from a place like, hey, you know, like they might end up here somewhere. It was just really that I respected those people so much and loved everything that, you know, that game had given me and they had given me. And it was just, even being in a workplace now and, you know, not saying that I don't have great work relationships now too, but the relationships you develop through any sport are just so, I feel like, genuine and just so, I mean, they're from good places and everything like that, and it's hard to come by. You know, the older that I get, I will be able to talk to those people for the rest of my life, and, you know, it's just part of the game, and it comes with it, and more specifically for this, I mean, without me playing other college sports, baseball gave me that, and I truly am thankful for that.
You know, and you know, it's almost like a fraternity, right? You know, we couldn't do it this year because of COVID, but hopefully next year we'll all go as a staff, as a Hack Shack staff, to the national convention. I think it's in Chicago, or maybe I think it's supposed to be in Chicago next year, but a couple years in Vegas, we'll definitely be there for that. May not make the convention, but we're going to be there. But, you know, man, like, just even going like last year to Nashville, to the national convention, I knew absolutely nobody. But, man, just the camaraderie around guys, just listening to different speakers. You know, I mean, the who's who of coaches doing demos, whatever. I mean, man, it really is kind of a fraternity, right? So, I mean, just making those kinds of connections, you just, like you said, you just never know when.
No, for sure. And even teammate-wise, too. I mean, a JUCO teammate of mine who, Brock Keener, who I love to death, I met him my freshman year in junior college. I'm still talk to him to this day. Ended up going to go play at the University of Michigan. Was the graduate assistant or student coach when they made the Omaha run. Is now, I believe, I could be wrong on this, but he's the youngest paid assistant coach in Division I baseball. He's now the assistant at Army at West Point.
Oh, really?
So he's up over there. Still talk to him to this day. Like I said, just a great guy in general. Ended up over there. Another good buddy of mine, Noah Shackles, is now the volunteer assistant at DBU. He's from Hawaii, was at an NAIA in California, had those connections to another really great dude who's now the volunteer assistant at DBU, who is it's a great program as well. So, like I said, just the fraternity of it, the brotherhood of it, it's really the best way to put it, it's like a brotherhood, it's unmatched. And even the respect too. I've made so many friends from guys that I haven't even played against. I mean, from junior college days, making friends with the Galveston College boys, to the San Jac boys, to even within the conference, just gaining the respect of different players and playing against them. You know, I think one of the coolest messages I got was going into my senior year. A fellow player who had just got drafted the year before from another school in conference reached out to me and said, "Hey man," like, just never talked to him, never met him before in my life, whatever, reached out on Instagram and just said, "Hey man, wish you the best," everything like that. He's like, "You were my least favorite player on the Little Rock team." He said, "But I mean that in a great way, because you left everything you had on the field." He's like, "I wish you the best this year, brother." And that for me, I mean, if that doesn't speak volumes about the game of baseball and everything like that, I mean, people respect, you know, your game and your hustle, and they can see it. And it goes both ways too. I mean, there's guys that I reached out to too, I mean, that I was fond of, who were my age or even a year younger and doing the same exact thing for that was at another school. And you just become fond of players and it just begins to grow. And that's just how it is.
Yep. So, man, like, you're kind of like the Pied Piper right now in San Antonio of the 10-year-old kids. So what do you take into your kind of what do you think has led to your success, man, here as a hitting instructor, especially with that kind of age demographic?
To be honest, it's tough. I mean, I think it. For me right now, at the age that I'm at, I mean, I've always been great with kids and everything like that, but I think the age that I'm at, I'm able to relate with these kids and kind of, you know, make connections. At the same time, we're 14, 15 years apart. Just to really understand, you know, how I was at that age, you know, and growing up, I wasn't, you know, the absolute best player. My grandfather told me point blank, I think I was about 10 or 11 years old, probably that age. I got invited to play on a select team. And I said, "Grandpa," or they reached out to him, or reached out to my grandpa and my mom, and they asked if I could play. And he told me, he comes back, he had told them no, and then he comes back and told me, and he told me why he told them no, and he told me that I wasn't good enough, that I was going to go out there and embarrass him.
Parents,
I do not advise you to tell your kids that, because I was absolutely crushed, but that's how my grandfather is, as about as straight shooter as it gets. It was the truth, though. I mean, looking back on it now, I wasn't good enough. It made me work harder. I mean, it definitely helped turn me into the baseball player that I was. But just understanding in that situation, you know, and going everything that I went through and being able to relate to those kids too. And I think the biggest thing that I harp on with kids and even through college, it's for me, it was so hard to have body awareness. And when a coach would tell me, "Hey, do this with your body, do that with your body, do this, move this mechanically," it never registered for me, like, and I never had that body awareness to be like, "Okay, do this, do this." It just never made sense. A lot of the things that I do with the 10-year-olds is more drill focused, and I don't want to say result oriented, but, you know, hit it to a part of the cage or the drill that's going to make you make the right movements to where you don't have to think about it. At the same time, we make mechanical adjustments here and there, but at their age, you know, their body awareness is nowhere near that of an 18, 22 year old. And they just really can't process everything that you would at an 18 to 22 year old level, at an adult level. At the same time too, though, with a lot of the kids that I have, I talk to them at a higher level. I hold them to a higher standard, just solely the fact that, though, too, is because I can see it in them and I know that they're going to be able to understand it. And even though they may not understand some of the things I say now, I know it'll kind of resonate in them, you know, as the years move on and everything like that.
So what have you, kind of going back, man, like, so you were fortunate enough to play through, you know, a great high school coach.
Dynasty.
Dynasty.
Carroll Tigers.
You know, played for Meagle, who's a college legend, you know, and then played at Alvin. Those guys have done great things for many years, and now on to Little Rock. So what do you take from those guys, or in your playing experiences from those coaches? What do you take into your coaching experience now? And how does it translate, you know what I mean, into your coaching? And
I think the biggest thing is outside, I mean, just really outside from, you know, specifically like mechanical things I learned, or, you know, mentality things that I learned from those coaches, I really think it's just the confidence that, you know, a coach can give kids is really like the biggest thing that I kind of took from those coaches and those things that I made. Like, you know, like there's sometimes that, you know, kids aren't sure if they're doing the right things or if they're making, or if what they're doing in the cage is, you know, is going to work, you know. And I think one thing simple that I harp on with all my kids is I ask them, you know, I said, well, before we start, you know, I said, say, who's the best? And then I want them to say, I'm the best, you know, like stuff like that. And believing in the work that you're doing. And I really think, you know, going through all these coaches who have definitely played a huge impact on my life. And from a baseball standpoint, too, I really think that aspect of it. And I think sometimes, too, even as coaches, we don't understand the impact we can have on kids by simply telling them, like, hey, you're a hell of a player, or you're doing a great job and stuff like that. But at the same time, too, I mean, you know, kind of based on the kid, you know, who needs it and who doesn't. But I definitely really take that into account because, like I said, I knew growing up and through like high school and stuff like that, and like my grandfather telling me I wasn't good enough. There was some times where I didn't know I was good enough, and I had those coaches that kind of understood that sometimes, and they would tell me, you know, those things. And so that's one of the kind of the biggest things, especially for a 10-year-old. You know, they don't know where their baseball career is headed. Yeah. They don't know how good they are. They don't know, you know, if this is what they want to do for the rest of their life. But that reassurance and that confidence is all we can give them. From there, you know, it'll kind of take off on its own.
Yeah, for sure.